Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Beter. Today is September 12, 1975, and this is my monthly audio letter number 4. As usual, there is a great deal more going on right now than meets the eye. The major media mislead the American people daily simply by presenting only those portions of the truth about events that add up to produce a desired impression. Thus, you can't hope to grasp the true significance of news events unless and until you learn to analyze the scanty facts in the news for yourself. Learn to separate fact from opinion. You are not given enough real facts to come to your own clear-cut, logical decisions, except perhaps in the area of sports. Instead, the gaps are filled in for you by commentary designed to lead you to conclusions that are not really your own. This is why I'm trying to open your eyes to the way things really work and to give you key information that you need to have. To this end, I want to discuss the following 3 topics today. 1. The International Monetary Fund Gold Sale Agreement and the dethroning of the United States dollar. 2. Assassination politics and subtle maneuverings in the countdown toward dictatorship. And 3. The rapidly emerging outlines of the planned 1977 war in Asia. At the end, I also hope to mention some brief hints about what you, the individual, concerned America, can do to help stem the tide and save our beloved land. Topic number 1. In my monthly audio letter number 2 for July 1975, I discussed the setback which David Rockefeller experienced at the June meeting of the International Monetary Fund, or IMF. Speaking through his agents in the United States Treasury, he had expected to succeed in persuading the member nations of the IMF to sell all of the IMF gold and was ready to buy the IMF gold as soon as it was sold. Much to David's surprise and chagrin, he failed in June 1975 because of French opposition. Based on their own awareness of the true status of Fort Knox and America's gold reserves. As I mentioned in that audio letter, the Rockefeller interests went to work in a feverish search for a means of achieving their objective, that is, a decision to sell IMF gold at the next IMF meeting in September this month. And if you paid any attention to the news early this month, you know that this time the Rockefellers did achieve a hasty compromise agreement. In a moment, I will explain exactly what was decided about potential gold sales at the early September meeting of the IMF. But first, I want you to notice the startling quid pro quo which the Treasury accepted on behalf of David Rockefeller as the price of selling the IMF gold. For years now, the United States Treasury has been debunking the monetary role of gold as obsolete, barbaric, and no longer needed. In this connection, the Treasury has been fighting for years to bar central banks from buying gold on the free market. The reason for this is to allow the interests controlled by David Rockefeller to corner the gold for themselves while they deliberately produced runaway inflation ruins the rest of us stuck with paper money that has no backing. But at the September 1975 IMF meeting, this position which the United States has stuck to uncompromisingly for years was suddenly abandoned. Why? What was it that made the United States agree to let central banks buy gold? They already had the right to sell it. What caused such a total defeat for David Rockefeller and such a dramatic reversal of a fundamental policy built up now for years? My friends, what caused the result is the spreading effect of our exposure of the Fort Knox gold scandal. The general American public still doesn't know about it, thanks to the news blackout imposed by CBS, ABC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, and other major media which are controlled and intimidated by the Rockefeller brothers themselves. But the most knowledgeable people in the financial community, here and abroad, increasingly do know that something is very fishy indeed about the United States Treasury Department. In short, the heat is on. Since we revealed the existence of the Central Core Vault in July and explained its role in the gold theft and fraud at Fort Knox, the Treasury knows that we know exactly what they have been doing and how. The conspirators know that if my associates and I ever are allowed to present our evidence in a court of law, before a grand jury, or in a congressional investigation, their fate is sealed. Their game, therefore, is to try to keep that from happening by keeping the public fooled and unaware of the truth. To this end, the Rockefellers made their big concession at the September IMF meeting in order to get some IMF gold returned to the Treasury. Under the terms of the agreement, 5 million ounces of IMF gold is to be returned to the United States from whence it came. This gold was originally promised for sale to the insiders within the Rockefeller circle, but now they want it instead to display or use it in gold auctions to keep the public fooled. In this connection, on August 21, 1975, shortly before the latest IMF meeting, the Treasury even held a well-publicized meeting with private gold dealers to discuss the question of holding auctions. This was pure propaganda and bluff, and intended to lend weight to any future auctions of gold obtained from the IMF. The frantic maneuverings to snatch some IMF gold for propaganda auctions is simply a replay of what they did last December to have a little gold to auction off. On December 9, 1974, the Treasury illegally emptied the tiny exchange stabilization fund of its 2 million ounces of gold, as I have mentioned in previous tapes. That was done simply to have something for the Treasury to sell in small propaganda auctions, since the rest of our gold reserves were long gone. With this important perspective in mind, listen please to what the IMF did on August 31, 1975, at the beginning of their so-called September meeting. 1. The widely publicized gold sale agreement of the IMF is an agreement in principle, a conditional agreement. The IMF is to meet again in January 1976 in Jamaica to discuss the exchange rate question. If and only if IMF members agree on that in January, then the conditional gold sale agreement, which has just been announced, will take effect. The stakes are so high for David Rockefeller and his partners in crime that I predict agreement will be reached at the January meeting in Jamaica. The political will is there. The IMF gold will then be officially released, although I am informed that steps are already being taken now behind the scenes illegally and prematurely to take possession of the 5 million ounces of gold and put it back in Fort Knox. By the way, there have been rumors lately that Mrs. Mary Brooks, the Director of the United States Mint, has tendered her resignation, but that it has not yet been accepted because it would look so bad. There are indications that her superior said, in effect, quote, "Just hang on for a few more months, Mary, while we get this whole thing about Fort Knox out of the way. Then you can go if you like," unquote. Be that as it may, we had one of our sources contact Mrs. Brooks, and here is what she said, quote, "There is nothing amiss at Fort Knox. I was there recently. I have never tendered my resignation, and I don't intend to do so. I don't know why these rumors keep coming up," unquote. Asked if she knew about the rapid retrieval elevator system to the Central Core Vault, she did not deny it, but just replied, quote, "Those kind of rumors come along all the time," unquote. Our source suggested to Mrs. Brooks that it would be a simple matter to open Fort Knox wide open to prove Dr. Beter wrong and, quote, "put an end to this matter once and for all," unquote. Her reply, and this is her exact reply, and I quote, "Oh no! It would take weeks," unquote. All I can say to that, my friends, is, yes, Mary, it will take weeks to get the 5 million ounces of gold back in Fort Knox. That is why I am informed there is some activity going on right now in Fort Knox. Meanwhile, Mary Brooks is trying to brazen it out. Returning to the IMF gold sale agreement, though, I should point out one other thing. Should there fail to be an agreement about exchange rates by the IMF in January in Jamaica, an unlikely event, then we will be back to square one on IMF gold sales. Should that happen, David Rockefeller and his fellow insiders will have used the IMF gold sales decision as a scare tactic throughout this fall of 1975 to run down gold prices and take all the gold they can out of weak hands. Also, they made billions of dollars going short. When the public becomes aware of this, gold prices will start up again. Number 2. The interim or conditional gold sale agreement specifies the following. Of the approximately 150 million ounces of gold now owned by the IMF, 1/6 or 25 million ounces is to be sold on the open market or to member central banks. The latter is what will actually occur. True to Rockefeller tradition, by the way, this IMF gold sale to suit their own purposes has been painted as a philanthropic move to raise money to aid poor and developing nations. Another 1/6 or 25 million ounces is to be returned to member nations of the IMF in proportion to the amounts of gold each nation originally contributed. Each nation may then keep or sell this returned gold, but you can bet they will keep it. Their own citizens will hang their central bankers if they don't. Under this clause, the United States is to receive about 5 million ounces, worth about $700 million at current market prices. This amount, I'm informed, has already been promised to the insiders, but events may undo this when the Fort Knox gold scandal breaks nationally and worldwide. It is this 5 million ounces of gold, equal to only about 2% of what the United States Treasury officially claims to have, that the conspirators want desperately to get their hands on, in case they need it for propaganda auctions or even another carefully staged peep show at Fort Knox. The remaining 2/3 of the IMF gold, or about 100 million ounces, is to stay put in the IMF for the time being. There it will remain as backing for the so-called special drawing rights, or SDRs, of the IMF. The SDR is to become the new international monetary unit or standard of measure, the yardstick, and then the other strong currencies that now make up part of the basket of the 16 currencies which constitute the SDRs will be the reserve currencies of the future, at least for the next 2 years. The dollar, therefore, is giving up its sovereignty as a sole reserve currency. The joker in this deck is that over half of an SDR is made up of the American dollar and British pound sterling, both of which lack gold backing. In the tremendous inflation ahead, the SDR will therefore be hobbling around on one leg, with its only real support consisting of the strong gold-backed currencies which comprise less than half its face value. Number 3, and very important, beginning January 1976, the IMF members have agreed not to fix an official gold price for a period of 2 years, provided the January 1976 agreement on exchange rates take place. This is exactly the development I have been warning about for over a year, based on information from my own confidential sources. They are behind schedule in obtaining this agreement, but the agreement itself is precisely on track. Once it is in place, they can easily make up for lost time in their plan to visit economic catastrophe on the United States and the world. What the IMF agreed to in principle is to allow its members, including the United States, to ask their respective governments to abolish the official price of gold, which is now $42.22 an ounce, once the exchange rate agreement is reached in January 1976. This means that for the following 2 years there will be only a market price for gold, subject only to supply and demand, plus massive massages by the Rockefeller interests to cause the price of gold to skyrocket. In other words, gold will be going private for 2 years starting in January 1976. The gold zoom signal of $180 an ounce, which I explained in my audio book recorded in October 1974, will be penetrated, and cataclysmic inflation and economic chaos will erupt. After 2 years of this, with the economy of the world and especially of the United States in smoking ruins, David Rockefeller, the man who orchestrated the whole thing in the first place, presently plans to call an international monetary conference to at last restore gold to its traditional monetary role. David's plan is to officially repay gold then at $2,000 an ounce, 20 times the current official price of $42.22 an ounce. Number 4. After the 2-year period just mentioned, according to the gold sale agreement just reached by the IMF, central banks will be allowed to buy all the gold they want. As I have already pointed out, this complete reversal of a key feature of the Treasury's long-standing gold debunking campaign is directly traceable to the steadily building pressure of the Fort Knox gold scandal and the desperate need of the conspirators to keep it covered up. Number 5. Until January 1976, no sales of gold will be made by the IMF to world gold markets or to central banks at market prices. It would not yet be legal to do so, but I fully expect that agreement will be reached at Jamaica in January and that IMF gold sales will then take place according to plans. Thus the United States dollar is now way overvalued. The United States Treasury is most anxious to get its house back in order, in appearance at least, to prevent the public from becoming aware that Fort Knox is truly empty of its gold. The Treasury now holds less than 800,000 ounces of gold a mere pittance left over from the 2 million ounces it illegally took from the Exchange Stabilization Fund on December 9, 1974. The rest was used for the propaganda auctions by the Treasury in January and June of this year. Gold fever will spread across the land in the near future as soon as the full significance of the IMF action is widely understood, and then the only questions will be not the price, but the availability of gold. The gold market today is very thin as it is, and the insiders had to scare the weak sisters in order to make them disgorge their holdings. As of now, David Rockefeller still plans for gold to be pegged at $2,000 an ounce and for the new SDRs to be the standard unit of measure. The United States dollar will lose its status as a world currency reserve. Even now, David Rockefeller's Chase Manhattan Bank is already linking some of its loans to SDRs. After all, who should know better than David that dollars are to be avoided? For the next 2 years after January 1976, those countries having gold in their central banks will be able to enjoy a fast markup in the value of their gold reserves of 20 to 1. Can you imagine? 20 to 1. Therefore, during that period, central banks will buy up at market prices the 25 million ounces that will be for sale by the IMF. That gold will never reach the private gold market at all. But the United States has been deliberately made gold poor by the Rockefeller brothers. Having no gold left of any significance, we are now in the same leaky boat as Britain. And look what is happening to Britain, which is already on the road to advanced socialism, cataclysmic inflation, deepening unemployment, and social and economic upheaval on the way to dictatorship are in store for all of us soon, if the gold situation is not rectified. And so, my friends, we are in a race against time. David Rockefeller and his collaborators in and out of the Treasury seek delay, delay, delay. They want to use the IMF gold and other tricks to keep the American people fooled until it is too late. Time, unfortunately, is on their side. Those of us who would like to see our nation saved, on the other hand, are pressing with every means at our disposal for a full, open, honest investigation of the whole thing without further delay. In this connection, I want to read some telling words from the front page of the Daily News Digest for the week of September 1, 1975. Their address, by the way, is Post Office Box 27496, Phoenix, Arizona, 85061. The headline is just one word, why. I now quote, "The Fort Knox gold story is far from dead. There's something rotten and the stink has spread across the land like a fog. Thousands of readers have followed our series closely. Like them, we have waited in vain for satisfactory answers to questions raised by Dr. Peter David Beter and his associate Ed Durrell. An exchange of letters with the United States Bureau of the Mint has produced nothing but double talk. The key question regarding the Central Core Vault still remains a mystery. Is the gold there or isn't it? Why is it so difficult to send a delegation to Fort Knox, open the vault and reveal its content, or lack of content? Why have no members of Congress taken it upon themselves to settle this matter? Is courage such a missing virtue in Washington that this can't be or won't be done? Why has the nation's press avoided the story with an intensity that is amazing? Is this not perhaps the biggest news story in the civilized history of the world? It certainly has that possibility. An evil group of individuals that can loot a nation's treasury, as has been charged, to the tune of $11 billion certainly deserves some attention, doesn't it? and the radio and TV industry didn't even mention the initial charges and covered only the peep show staged at Fort Knox last September. But the newspapers, where are they? Why the blackout on a Fort Knox story? Is there some powerful force that scares them into submission? Or would they lose so much advertising that they can't run the story? Or do the major editors think the story is so outrageous as to merit no attention? Outrageousness certainly didn't prevent Jane Fonda and others from getting front page coverage. Yes, something stinks. Is the gold there or isn't it? Which of our congressmen has the guts to find out? Unquote. Finally, here's an item for you to think about if you are tempted to swallow the Rockefeller propaganda about the swaggering economic power of the Arabs and oil-producing states. On September 5, 1975, a reporter posed the following question to Dr. Abdul Rahman Latiki, Minister of Finance of Kuwait at the National Press Club. Quote, "None of the oil-producing states spoke during the World Bank and IMF meetings. Why not?" Unquote. Dr. Atiki answered, quote, "Addressing people seems to be of no meaning. If the United Nations or World Bank meetings had a time to listen, exactly as good listeners should, everyone would speak. But most of the speeches just go into the air. Nobody hears it, whispering, most of the delegates out of the room, and then it is a text in a book. If it happens, sometimes somebody reads it. This is why. And secondly, it is known who runs the policy of the monetary system of the world, and we cannot, for the time being, compete with them. We are in their hands. So this is a fact. We have to live with it, unless we break through, and we are looking for that time." Unquote. His answer met with knowing applause. It expresses not only the predicament of the oil-producing nations, it expresses yours and mine as well.